good to be here. I'm from Santa Monica, California. My home group is the Big Book Steps 10, 11, and 12 meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Tuesday nights at 7:30 on the corner of 2nd and Hill in Santa Monica. I'd love for any of you to come if you're ever there. I'd like to thank the committee and Joni for inviting me. It's always an honor to be asked to share in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the only real problem with that is that I need to remember who gets the credit for that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in August 17, 1982. And because this program works in my life, I haven't had to take a drink. In thinking about this topic, there was a terrible problem. I was asked several months before this to share today, and I have probably given at least 20 or 30 talks before today in my own mind. They were wonderful. So rather than do that again, I said a prayer in the bathroom like I did the first time I was asked to do this. Hope that maybe it comes out better. There's a couple stories that came to mind in thinking about this topic for the last several months that have been shared with me that I think are appropriate to the topic of identification. And one of them is about the way I identified most of my life until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was given the freedom to quit identifying my problem as you or it or her. And it's a story about a man, God forbid, he's been sober forever and he's on his deathbed. And his wife is there, right by his side. And he looks up at her and he says, "Honey, after all these years, I've realized something." She says, "Well, what's that?" And he says, "Well, you were there that time I got shot. And you stood by me. You've always been there. And you were there that time I lost all our money in business. You were right there and you stood by me. And you were there that time I had my first stroke and you were stood by me. And you've always been right there and you've always stood by me. And after all these years, I've realized one thing. You are a frigging jinx." The first time I heard that, I was reminded of how I think and how I identify my problem. And I related to that. In thinking about our common problem and what are we supposed to say or what was said to me or how important it was to me that somebody shared the entire program of Alcoholics Anonymous with me at a time when I was literally dying of alcoholism and I didn't know it. Because I was going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, believing that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was a member of the fellowship. And a man said to me one day that I was dying of untreated alcoholism, and he told me the truth. He was willing to risk my sensitive alcoholic feelings and tell me the truth. So I was watching this movie a month ago, Old Gringo, with Jane Fonda and Gregory Peck. And there was this Spanish man who had been shot dying in bed. They were sitting by his bed. And in the middle of the night, he woke in pain and he screamed in Spanish, "It hurts, it hurts." Gregory Peck went over to his bed to comfort him. And the Spanish man looked up at Gregory Peck and he said, "Am I dying?" And Gregory Peck said, "Yes." And he shook and he died. And Jane Fonda was looking at him with a look of puzzlement, and she said, "How could you tell that man that he was dying?" And Gregory Peck said to her, "Well, every man deserves to know the truth at least once before he dies." She said, "But it's so sad to think of someone dying alone and afraid. Why did you tell him the truth? He didn't need the truth. He needed comfort." He said, "Why? Very few of us are given anything else before we go than that." And I understood that. I understood that scene in that movie. I related to that. I think before I begin, I only have a few minutes, but there are a few quotes that I've heard lately in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that I wonder about concerning this topic. Quotes like, "A drug is a drug, and alcoholism is addiction." And I wonder to myself how grateful that I am that someone helped me see the difference. I heard another guy say that there's as many ways to work the program as there are people in it. And I thought to myself, what have we become? An outpatient program with a different program for everybody that comes in? And I was sad. I heard another man say that we just don't drink no matter what. And I thought to myself, if I could do that, I would not be in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1982, I had been to 10 treatment centers. I had been to the penitentiary as a direct result of my drinking. I had lost my family. I had lost everything worthwhile in life. And I woke up one day in a motel in Denver, Colorado, where I got sober and I couldn't drink anymore. And I don't know how that happens for a guy like me. And I went back to a treatment center where I heard the message of Alcoholics Anonymous that has kept me coming back until today. An excitement, a joy, a love, a freedom, an answer to the question, what's wrong with me, that had been in the back of my mind since before I ever took a drink. I don't know how many of you will relate to this, but I'm the guy that at age 10, 11, and 12 would sit in the backyard waiting for a spaceship to land and a little green man get out and tell me, you weren't really born here on this planet. We brought you here as a teeny baby. This has been a test. Because I felt different, and I felt separate, and I felt out of place. And I set out on a journey from age 13 to 30 to find out an answer to that question that was in the back of my mind before I ever took a drink. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I'm released from the Michigan State Penitentiary, age 21, and I report to my PO 28 days out of the penitentiary, and he tells me every reason why I shouldn't drink. He tells me how great I'm doing. I walk out of his office into a bar to buy a pack of cigarettes, pick up a drink, and wake up 5 days later 125 miles away, and I didn't want to do that. I was taken from a locked ward in a psychiatric unit to my father's funeral. He had died in the same hospital that I was in, and he didn't know I was there, being detoxified from alcohol. And they took me to his funeral, and my mother said to me something she had never said to me in the 19 years that I had been alive and the 6 years that I had been drinking. She said to me, please don't show up drunk at your father's funeral. And I said to her, with all the love and everything I could muster, I won't. And I meant it. And I asked him, could I go across the street to see a friend, because a guard had brought me to my own father's funeral. And I said to my friend, can I have a beer? I'd like to cool down just a little bit before the funeral. And somewhere between the second one and the 20th one, I lost the power of choice over how much I was going to drink. And I showed up to my daddy's funeral so messed up that the guard that brought me chained me to a tree by my ankle at my own father's funeral. And I didn't want to do that. And there was day after day after day after day in my life from before I ever took a drink where that question was in the pit of my stomach. What's wrong with me? I set out to find out. I've tried to find out in treatment centers. I tried to find out in college. I got a degree in psychology. I became a therapist in a treatment center, drinking with the director of the program that I worked for. Desperately trying to find out what's wrong with me. And in the pages of a book that my sponsor began to share with me when I reached a point in Alcoholics Anonymous where I couldn't pull off on purpose what I used to do by mistake. That day that you reach in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to pull off unbelievable stuff by mistake drunk. Money, jobs, relationships, getting out of scrapes. And I reached a point in my sobriety after 5.5 months where I couldn't do on purpose what I used to do by mistake. And I saw that. And I went to a man who's been my sponsor ever since, and I asked him to help me. And he took me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page by page. He laid the program out in front of me. He took me to assemblies, and I followed him around to conventions until it was my turn. And in doing that, I found out the answer to that question. I have a physical and a mental and a spiritual malady that no human being can relieve, and that's not just low self-esteem. I have a physical, mental, and a spiritual disease that no human being, no human power can relieve, and that's not just compulsive, obsessive behavior that I can change. I found out the difference between my alcoholism and my addiction. I got clear on alcoholism because of a man that was willing to take the time to help me find out the answer to that question. What's wrong with me? What can I do? And what am I going to do once I find something? And I found that in a three-part program. And I found that sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous as a member of the fellowship did not qualify me to be in AA. That there were two parts I was not involved in. I found out the only requirement for membership is not the only requirement for this guy to stay sober. My strongest desire never lasted 28 days ever in 17 years. And I started to identify. I read Bill's story. I had a real problem. I'm not a stockbroker, never been married, and didn't go to war. They told me, forget the differences, look for the similarities, and start to do that in meetings. And I found myself relating to women. Several different ways. I started relating to men that had lived on Skid Row. I'd only been there in my gut, but I understood them. I'd lived from the penthouse to the streets, and I didn't think I understood. I thought I was different. Don't you understand? I'm an alcoholic and a whatever. Anything to separate myself from you. That's what my disease is all about. That's the function of my ego. Here, in Alcoholics Anonymous, let alone in the 17 years that I drank, it will do anything it can to separate me from you. And I started to go through the recovery process of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life started to change. And I started to identify to you. I started to understand how you feel, because I started to understand how I feel. I started to understand the God in you, because I began to experience the God in me. I'm very grateful for the people that encouraged me to find something within myself. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, if the phone was off the hook and there wasn't a meeting to go to, that there is a place within me that I can go and find the answer to that question at any given moment. What's wrong with me? And give me the tools to do something with those things. When I face resentment, when I face fear, when I'm consumed by self, the program that was laid out for me is available. I wasn't going to tell this, but I heard a story not too long ago, and it really made me angry, and I knew there was something I needed to look at. In our inventory process, where I begin to identify the things that block me from God, I started to see the great statement of hope from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that our troubles are of our own making, and I get free. Because for 30 years until I came to this program, my troubles were of your making. It was because of the way I was raised. It was because my daddy was 57 when I was born. It was because of this or because of that. And if only they would have been different. And somewhere in this process, I began to experience the freedom, seeing that my troubles are of my own making. I am no longer a victim, nor do I have a bumper sticker that says shit happens. I'm no longer a victim of bad luck. I have no trouble at all bringing it on myself. I don't need any help. The only part about that is that my troubles rise out of myself, and I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. In the 10th and 11th step, I begin to identify what's going on, what's blocking me from God. And I heard this story, and this man said, you know, God forbid, but if you took 100 of us from Alcoholics Anonymous and put us back in the bar, you know what you'd find? He said, you'd find about 20 or 30 belly up to the bar, wallowing in their beer, crying in their whiskey. And the sad thing about that is some of them wouldn't know there's anything more to find in alcohol, and some of them would enjoy it. He said, then you'll find about 20 or 30 in the middle of the bar, sitting at the tables, come in, drink till they feel good, and then they go home. He said, then you'll find about 30 or 40 mad dogs in and out of the bar, going here, going there, doing this, going for the gusto, do it to the max, getting in fights, going to jail, doing it up. Because they know there's more to find in alcohol, and it doesn't just begin with feeling good. He said, now take those 100 people, put them back in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you'll find a very sad thing. They will usually settle for what they did when they were drinking. And I'm here to tell you, I will not sit in these rooms and wallow in my big book and cry in my stuff, because I know one thing, there is a solution. I will not sit in these rooms and come in and do enough till I feel good and go home, because when I've done that, my own gratitude begins to choke me because I'm not giving it away. I was a mad dog then, I'm a mad dog now. Several questions came to my mind in considering this topic. Is alcoholism addiction? Is there a difference? Have we become an outpatient treatment program with an individual program for everybody that walks in, and that you're terribly different than me? Or do we have a common problem that we can share in? Do we have a common solution? And do we have a common purpose once we find that solution for the rest of our lives? I mean, that's all I ever wanted. I wanted to do something that meant something, and nothing I was doing meant anything to anybody but me. Thank you for letting me share.